never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 64th Skinnon Podcast. Yes.
Any went on 64 jokes? I can't sing. Does anybody have a go?
No.
No.
No. Okay. No,
that's all I got.
I'll let that slide, I think.
Cool. Philip, despite being back from Venice, is too good to join us this evening, so or busy or something.
Yeah, yeah, something like so he says.
Yeah. So we'll start with Darren.
Cool. So, as we discussed last week, I watched a couple of the Scream movies. I watched the first three Scream movies. Because we were talking about them last week and I thought it might be fun to talk about them this week. And they hold up very well. Okay, well, the first two hold up very well, I think. But what sort of struck me rewatching them is the fact that, despite the fact they're written by Kevin Williams and they're very much deconstructions of the genre, there's a certain very traditional element to them. So the scoring, for example, is very much sort of Bernard Herrmann-esque.
A lot of that.
you could tell that there's going to be a stabbing because the violin section wakes up, you know?
And the second one seems to take off quite a lot more.
And the direction is very conventional. You know, it's playful, but it's not playful in a way that slasher films weren't playful in the 80s and stuff like that. I think that works because you have the script that's being subversive and Ryan Clevel, but you also have like a base level of competence in doing a film like this that works. So you get like the perfect pitch storm of it sort of critiquing and picking apart the conventions of the genre, but also like reveling in them and enjoying the fact that they have a significant budget and a great cast in which to do it. So I quite enjoyed them and think they held up relatively well, at least the first two.
Yeah, I watched the first two. And to some degree, I think for the most part I agree. What I noticed is this, they're skillfully put together. The kind of deconstruction of the genre is great, and the knowing humour is great. I don't think they're particularly scary.
No.
With the exception possibly of the opening sequence of the first film, which is a masterclass.
I think it's
genuinely unsettling.
No, it is. It's everything with the phone call.
Yeah.
And the way,
and because it's that, because we know now, like we can watch it now after seeing it so many times and stuff, it still hasn't lost much impact, considering like
the fact that when it was released, it was Drew Barrymore was on the poster, you were of the impression that it was quite possible she was going to be sticking with us for the rest of the film, rather than swapping out to Neve Campbell.
Sure.
I quite like the opening of the second film.
In the cinema.
Yeah,
I do as well.
It's very clever. And it also makes a point, which it's kind of nice that it makes the point, but it draws attention to the fact that, you know, the rest of the films ignore it, which is that Jada Plunkett Smith sort of talks about how, you know, it's just a bunch of white people who end up getting stabbed.
Yeah.
And then you have the two African-American characters, herself and Omar Epps, who appear in the opening scene, get brutally stabbed, and then it's a bunch of white guys and Courtney Cox's cameraman. And you're like, okay, it's a very valid criticism you made about the demographics of the cast in films like this. It might be more interesting if you'd followed through on that.
It would have, yeah. But at least it made the point,
I
guess.
I thought it was very clever. And
straight away into the second film was like this.
Yeah.
Like someone's responding to it, the kind of lack of in the first one. But no, they're good. I mean, I like them. I don't think the second one quite holds up as well as I remember it. I enjoyed it, but it's. I think the first one's far superior and a lot smarter.
It's novel.
I think maybe that's the thing. And so they're retreading to some degree each time round while trying to spin it a little more.
Well, I mean, I think there was, like, this is the thing, this is my problem with the third film, right? So I think there is a clear progression from the first, the second, in terms of, like,
it's a commentary on a sequel.
Yes, it's a commentary on a sequel, which is a cool thing to do. And it's also, you know, it's sort of like, it's a commentary upon a commentary. So you have stuff like, you can have the twist where it's the boyfriend, oh no wait, it's not the boyfriend because you thought it was the boyfriend.
Yeah.
And instead of it being sort of characters that make sense, it's a reversal of the Friday the 13th setup where it turns out it's the mother of the killer from the first film. Or it's the characters who are patently stand-ins for like Gale Weathers and for Randy.
Yeah.
They're the ones who turn out to be the killers. I think the third film doesn't work as well because it doesn't push the concept further. I don't think that it does.
Is there a way to push the concept?
I think the fourth one did it.
Okay.
I think the fourth one.
I'd yet to get to the third or the fourth, which I may or may not do.
Depending on
my dwindling enthusiasm. Okay. But I did like in the second one where they're in the kind of classroom sort of discussing sequels.
Oh, yeah.
House 2, the second story.
It's still good, though. I knew the joke was coming and I knew it. It's like, but I accept it because within horror, there's probably a million films that sequel that is equal, if not better.
Because, or as good as, because the first one is terrible.
Yeah,
but it's just cost
effective. It's a legitimate question and a legitimate answer in the context of horror genre.
Yeah.
Which I like. It's still funny.
Cool. So yeah, so I watched that. What else did I watch? I watched... I'm drawing a blank now. Oh, I watched This Is Where I Leave You, which is the Sean Levy dramedy, which is packed full of people who really should know better.
Was describing Darren watching it, who really should know better.
No, in my defense, it was the Mooney family film of the evening.
It was
a democratic process, yes. The democratic process does not work, people. It was passable. It was grand. But you look at it and you kind of wonder why people like Tina Fey and why people like Jason Bateman, who are obviously very, very talented and exceptional performers, make, broadly speaking, questionable choices in terms of star vehicles.
Bateman makes a lot of them.
He makes some bad choices.
What was it? The Change Up is the film where it's him, Ryan Reynolds, and Olivia Wilde, and they're all three of them have qualities that, you know, that recommend them as performers, but none of them can pick a film to save their life. There's your warning sign right there.
This is true, actually. It's a fair point. I'd be hard pressed to come up with a couple of names with a gun to my head.
And I think they are competent performers. And I think Bateman is a very good performer. I think Bateman has like some great stuff in him.
He's got an easy charm, and you know, he kind of camera like some. He should be in better stuff. He clearly should.
And that's it. When I think of outside of his work in his work on television, when I think of stuff that he's good in, it's mostly the Horrible Bosses films, and those are just okay at best.
He's also an Extract, isn't he? Isn't that the Mike Judge one that didn't really work?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which is okay, but not great.
Cool. The other film we watched, because I won the second round, we watched Locke.
Yes, I rewatched Locke as well.
Locke is great.
Locke is amazing.
It is, it's really good.
Really like Locke. I will rewatch it actually, because it doesn't take too much of your time either.
No, it doesn't. It's as you said, it's very tight, it's in and out. It's like Phone Booth, if it were set in a car, and instead of a sniper rifle, it was a construction worker.
A cement mixer.
But aside from that, it's a perfect analogy.
Concrete.
and Tom Hardy doing an amazing Welsh accent.
Oh yeah, it was brilliant.
Like
if you're hiring initially though, because you're not expecting it.
Yeah,
and then initially sets it and it's fine.
And it's lyrical.
It's like, it works. I'm fine with it. But initially, I wasn't expecting it.
And I like the fact that the script has a very obviously lyrical quality to it, to the point where like the idea that he's a construction worker laying solid foundations while trying to repair a mistake that he made. It's very much a labored metaphor, and that's a pun because he's rushing to the birth.
Nobody's thinking it's not a pun with you.
Okay. but I think the film both Hardy sells it, and I think the film commits to it enough that when he talks about, you know, how his building will stand and it'll cast a shadow 5 miles long, and that's a terrible Welsh accent I'm putting on now.
God.
That's Welsh, is it?
That's supposed to be Welsh. But yes, it's great. I really, really enjoyed it. So that's me.
Excellent. I'd watch the screens, but we've already discussed those. Okay, I got three films yesterday that I've seen, and we'll kick off with Mistress America, which I really wish Philip was here for this, but he's not. I've had weird kind of love-hate relationship with Noah Baumbach. Squid and the Whale is still my favourite film of his. I'm okay on Margot the Wedding and Greenberg, and I was met on Francis Ha, and I really didn't like While We Were Young. Really didn't like it. So Mistress America, Philip said that he really hated it. I read his review today, and he did. And
he wasn't lying.
So I went to it with a sense of trepidation and no real expectation. But still, you know, you never know. But I quite liked it. It's surprisingly good. And there's the difference between this for me and While We Were Young. I don't know if you've seen While We Were Young, either.
No.
Okay. But While You're Young, it's very surface level kind of story. There's no real depth to it. So the characters become kind of hateful because they've nothing to them except to moan about everything. And it gets really, really exhausting after every time. Whereas in this film, Greta Gerwig again playing MVP after sterling work in Francis Ha, she has this kind of New York lifestyle that it is on the surface, kind of hipster, you know, reclaimed furniture. You know, what does she do? She works in all sorts of different things. She's going to open a restaurant. All the kind of classic New York kind of hipster cliches that you'd expect for somebody of a certain age that lives in the city to do. But it comes quite clear later on that she doesn't really have any of these things. Not in a kind of tangible sense. They're all kind of almost there. They're in the air, but she's very scattered, very sad. And there's an underlying kind of emotional sadness to it that she is actually deeply unhappy and can't get the things she wants because she's either not smart enough or she's not hard-working enough or it's just beyond her. And it gives it an emotional kind of layer that kind of propels the film forward. And it's an excellent first hour or so, or maybe 50 minutes. And then it takes on this kind of farcical element for about 25 minutes, which is kind of a bit silly. It has this kind of last act is kind of set in a house in Connecticut and it's a bit all over the show, which kind of detracts from the whole film as a whole. But I'd recommend it. It's pretty good. It's an interesting story. It's a lot better than the previous two. It's not perfect. There are problems with it, but I'd like it.
So he's not quite bound back to form.
It's somewhat. I mean, it's 3.5 stars.
No,
that's which is pretty generous.
And Gerwig was she co-wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense because there's a little more depth to it. Then maybe she certainly invested her character with more depth than in Frances Ha, I would say.
Yeah, no, I loathe Frances Ha. She was very, very good.
Yes, she was. The only I liked a bit of her. She kind of held the thing from being unwatchable, quite frankly.
I'm not sure I go that far, but that's not a comment on her.
See, I happen to quite like Frances Ha. Oh. Mostly because of her. Yeah,
okay. It's just subpar with Woody Allen.
So we all agree it's just the level of hatred that we have for the film itself that she's holding together on which we disagree.
Yeah. Speaking of subpar with Woody Allen, as I'm a huge Woody Allen fan, I saw Irrational Man as well, and this has problems. This is real problems.
Woody Allen films do, with the one exception.
That's not true. I think that's harsh. I think quite if you've made 40-odd, 50 films.
Yeah, no,
you're going to have some that have problems, and quite a few. But I would say that there's half a dozen masterpieces, possibly another 10 that are not far off, and then a few that are very decent, and then you've got slipping towards the bottom.
Yeah, and this is where we are.
Yeah, well, but it's interesting. Like, I was watching it, and I was watching Emma Stone and Joaquin Phoenix speak their dialogue and didn't believe a word of either of them.
Really?
They didn't feel like they were people speaking. They were literally speaking dialogue as opposed to saying sentences. Emma Stone is dreadful in it. I know, Niall, don't cry. It's okay.
I would disagree with that. I thought she was pretty good.
I thought she was really poor. And I think it was the script problems were
a real
problem for them.
Yes.
And Phoenix isn't your standard
Woody Allen for that.
Which doesn't matter in some ways because Blanchett wouldn't have been either, and it can work or it can't work. And I don't think it worked really here. He just mumbled around.
Yeah, that's it. I find it really weird to mumble Woody Allen dialogue.
It just didn't really work. I thought Stone was left with nothing to do. Our character was kind of confused. She was this type of person, and all of a sudden she's this type of... It just didn't work.
Okay, I thought the character was pretty consistent. I thought the character was simplistic, but I thought it was pretty consistent.
I didn't think it was consistent. I think it was... things that just threw me that, like those occasional kind of lines that was like, hang on a second, that's not anything to do with what you say there 5 minutes.
My problem with it would be primary, and I feel like we're talking about an abstract because we don't want to spoil or whatever.
Yeah.
But my problem is that it sets itself up to be a lot more wiry and clever and wry than it actually is. It adopts a very simplistic.
It's not really funny. It's not aimed at being a comedy.
No,
really.
It's not. It's
but there's nothing to lighten the mood though. There's very little.
Yeah.
Levity. There's nothing actually really that kind of just drags it on.
Yeah.
And
but I think there's enough interest. There was enough interest for me anyway.
Yeah. The kind of funny thing about it is, despite all that, I was fascinated by it, and I was thinking about it most of the day yesterday.
Yeah.
There's something about it that it's the tone.
Yeah. The
of
tone.
Direction. It's very strange.
It is.
And it's like I kind of liked it.
It's Midnight in Paris meets Matchpoint, basically.
Yeah, and it's a strange feeling. And at a certain point, probably the 3/4 way through it, it gets quite airless and suffocating and kind of weird.
Yeah.
And it's like, I kind of like that. You know, I like that.
But
it's
like
an
80s
thriller vibe
that,
almost.
Yeah.
Like,
but I like the weird transition.
So did I. But I just, before that, I didn't buy into this scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't get buy-in and that kind of thing, you're kind of lost for a chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
And I had similar problems with Magic and Moonlight, weirdly. Of the last two Woody Allen films, I couldn't get into it until quite late into the film.
Yeah.
for whatever reason, and it just didn't work out the gate. And I think that's a problem. But overall, it's not. I mean, this is poor.
Nobody's going to be pointing at it and saying this is quintessential.
But it's still fascinating. It's a fascinating failure. I wouldn't even go
so far as to call it a failure. I'd say it's a fascinating mediocre work. You know, like. And that sounds worse.
It's not a failure. It's just mediocre.
Mediocre Alan, though. Like,
okay, all right. Yeah,
like,
okay.
This is like a B minus C plus grade, but okay. in the class where he's produced 40 odd films.
Yeah, okay. I'll reluctantly accept that. It was a 2.5 star for me.
Okay, so perfect, 50%.
Yeah, but it could easily be in 2. It got an upgrade very late in the day, like. Anyway, my final film then I saw was Cartel Land, which is the documentary on the kind of Mexican border drug cartels in small towns of Mexico. And then there's a kind of parallel to this is the kind of these, soldiers, not even soldiers, private armies along the border. Militia, that's the word. Yeah. So it's kind of parallel kind of story, kind of cut between one and the other. And they're kind of the whole exposed to problems along the border on both sides. And it's a fascinating documentary. There's some distressing footage in terms of murders and stuff that happened in Mexico. Like, the actually inhumanity of it. It's actually deeply distressing. Some of the shots of decapitated bodies, horrifying, people being hung at different angles. It's really, really disturbing. And the film kind of addresses in Mexico, there was a kind of a movement, auto-defense. Something it's called, I don't know, it's a kind of Spanish word for it, but it's basically a kind of group that decided kind of to take the law into their own hands and try to claim their towns back, and they all got guns, and they basically went and took the towns back in the cartel. That's the kind of the thing of it. And then,
without spoiling it, did they succeed, or would that be a spoiler?
There's a certain bittersweet victory in it. That's not necessarily a victory, because corruption rears its ugly head as it tends to do. The only problem I had, the documentary in terms of its setup and its ideas is fine. The only problem I had is that the directorial decision, I presume, and the editing decision is to kind of force a narrative on it where it didn't really need to be. There was certain plot beats, is the only way I can describe it, that kind of, you know, the show is shot at a certain point there, like, that's going to come back later because I'm building up to this and the music cues that do it simply. So they're trying to force it down a path to tell the story that they want to tell, as opposed to letting the story unfold, which is then technically the document. But so it felt a little manipulative, which all to some degree all documentaries are, because they're telling
they're
the story.
They're obviously edited.
Of course they are. But there's certain documentaries that you tell the story a little better. It's my own preference. I prefer a documentary that it feels like the story, you're being presented with the story as opposed to being shown the same aspect of the story. So I thought that it kind of reduced its impact somewhat. But fascinating nonetheless.
Which is the reason that a lot of people like Blackfish, but
I have major problems with Blackfish.
Because of its politics.
Plus it's actually really badly shot. But anyway, that's it. It's actually technically very poor. But it's an interesting one. The message is no argument.
But there's no balance to it whatsoever. Yeah.
You know, so to some degree, it doesn't really pretend either. But yeah, I take your point. I completely agree. But I don't think this suffers from that as badly. It doesn't, and it isn't really. The story on the American side is not, the documentary is not nearly as interesting. So it almost reluctantly goes back to it here and there.
Okay.
And then the crowbar thing in where the American guy goes, "Oh, look at the computer. It's like there's this gang in Mexico that are doing this thing," and that could look to
and
them.
It's like,
so
linking
it up,
yeah.
Like, you know, as like it felt like it was, they had all their film was done. It's like,
and
no, we can do is shoot up a little scene where you can just point to the computer and say it felt like there was a hand directing it in that way, and that reduces impact, unfortunately. Yeah. But okay,
cool. I rewatched Die Hard and Die Hard 2.
It must be weeks since you've seen
that. Yeah, exactly. They happened to be on early in the morning, dinner morning, so I was up with my young son, so.
And it's never a bad time to show your young child Die Hard.
Exactly.
Die Hard 2, more questionably, but.
I like Die Hard 2. I'm weirdly.
Yeah.
Weirdly positive of it.
I like Die Hard 2 as well.
I.
2.
Die Hard 2. 2.
Sorry.
I find it the second worst of the Die Hard sequels.
Hang on.
I like this. It's like a mathematical
problem.
This is like leaving Sir film notes.
There's been 4 sequels, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we all know which one's the worst of them, right?
That's the fifth one.
Yeah.
So second worst is the fourth.
Die Hard 4 is not. It's got Timothy Oliphant. So
I know it has Timothy Oliphant. No, it's not. It's not good.
It has some great sequences.
Yeah, but it's not good.
No, it is. Die Hard 2 is better.
I would go 1, 3, 2, 4, 5.
Yes, that's where I go as well. But
I would say that 2 feels very much like it's rehashing the first.
But it rehashes it really well.
Yeah, but Home Alone 2 rehashes the first.
And which
it
doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's still better than Home Alone 3. Or Skyfall. Yeah.
It's not better than Skyfall.
No, it's not.
But I like where you went though.
I find the 2 feels very, very much adhering to the familiar. It's that classic sequel problem. It's the people want more of the same. So give them more of the same.
And thank you for giving me more of the same. I was very happy with it.
Yeah, but they crash planes and stuff.
Yeah.
It does
as Colm Mealey as a pilot.
As a British Airways pilot.
It does broaden it out a bit, you know. So
I find the best part of Die Hard 2 is spotting all the future character actors in the terrorists.
Well, true, but it gave Dennis Farina the chance to be
a
cop. He never gets a chance to be a
cop.
Very good.
Yeah, so I also
cast of this.
Yeah, I also rewatched Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi first. What Sam Raimi?
Oh, it's been a long
time. That was
time.
It. That's what I figured. I watch superhero movies quite often, but it's been quite a while since I'd watched the first Spider-Man, and it still has a lot to sell it on. It still has. It's Spider-Man 2 is better.
Spider-Man 2 is a lot better.
But it's still very, very good. In terms of the Spider-Man movies, it's the second best one. So.
Yes.
I could have record, I haven't seen any of the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man films.
I am the only person who didn't mind The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I hated The Amazing Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2 has... Yeah, The Amazing Spider-Man 1 was butchered. It was absolutely butchered in the edit.
And trying to do Batman Begins with Spider-Man sort of misses the point
of
Spider-Man.
Very strange. And The Amazing Spider-Man 2 has significant problems as well, but of a different ilk. It's trying to create a universe in one movie, which is just
featuring
madness.
One character.
I've never even desired to see either of them. Oh, yeah. I've seen like, I don't care for this.
I quite like
the Raimi movies. Third one aside.
Yeah, but the second one is spectacular.
Mm. Second one is amazing. And what I like about the Raimi movies is that they are stylized. I feel like what you lost when you get... And this is the thing where we're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Disney's sort of management of the properties.
You're talking about the homogeny that comes with it.
The homogeny that comes with it, which is grand because it obviously makes bank and it's very successful and it leads to a shared universe, which is interesting in itself. But I like the idea of a film that feels like it came from a particular director with a particular...
It feels like a Raimi film.
It feels like... Yeah, it feels...
And that's important, I think.
Like, the second film has the scene with the tentacles during the operation, and it's like it's an Evil Dead scene that you can show your kids.
I'd agree with that.
Or the bit at the end where he's trapped her in the warehouse that looks like something from a Tim Burton film. It's great. Like I really like the fact that the first two films really feel like Sam Raimi films.
Oh, we must rewatch. Actually, it's kind of anytime you get a chance to watch something that you know Sam Raimi kind of influencing.
Like, I think Drag Me to Hell is also
with the exception of whatever Niall's about to say.
Yes, Spider-Man 3.
Marvel.
I tried. Okay. I gave it 25 minutes.
Sam Raimi was not the problem with All of the Great and Powerful.
No, James Franco is the problem.
James
Franco is the problem with everything.
Also the script. Yeah, I don't need an origin story for the Wicked Witch. That's basically because she's jealous and jilted. That's why she's green, people. That's why she's green. And you can tell that somebody in the producer's room was like, okay, that's great, we're done for today.
Yeah, and I've seen an origin story for the Wicked Witch. It's called Wicked.
And it's much very, better. Very yeah. Why don't you just point a camera at a stage production of Wicked and it would be a much more satisfying film?
I wouldn't have Michelle Williams in it, but you know.
Yeah.
That'd be Cloud.
Yeah.
But anyway, I enjoyed watching Spider-Man, and that means now I can watch Spider-Man 2.
Because otherwise you just mess up the order.
No, but the thing is, the great thing about Spider-Man 2 is you can watch it without 1, because the entire story of 1 is told in the opening credits. Beautifully in the opening credits.
Yeah, true.
I mean, that was also around the time of the second X-Men film as well, so that was sort of like...
X-Men did the same sort of thing, yeah. Yeah. It's just...
It was
X-Men 2
is spectacular.
It is. That was sort of like the Brian Cox revival film, wasn't it? Mainstream cinematic revival for Brian Cox.
True, until then Bourne.
It sort of opened the door to it. I still think it's probably the best X-Men film.
It's the best X-Men film.
It is.
Yeah.
Although I'm surprised how much I like Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past is very good as well.
I didn't like First Class at all. Okay. You just don't like Matthew Vaughn.
I do not like Matthew Vaughn, but I watched Days of Future Past with no explanation whatsoever, and I liked it a lot.
But Days of Future Past should have been a car wreck.
I mean, it should have been. Singer knows that universe so well.
And it wasn't, and it was good.
Yes. It was great.
Yes. I really liked it.
And I think it was clearer than, I think Days of Future Past was just too muddled for me. Like, as big a fan of comic book continuity and, like, labyrinthine plots and unnecessary sort of overlong blockbuster films, I think that Days of Future Past is just inelegant in places.
On the talk of overlong blockbuster films, we're going to move on to the news.
Part
of the news is that it's rumored that Spectre is going to be the longest Bond of all. It is going to be 240.
Wow.
Days long.
240 minutes long, so that is... Two hours and 40 minutes long. Which
160,
is just going to be,
160,
yeah, 160 minutes.
Minutes,
which is just...
That's long.
That's great. It'd be the longest running Bond film with the longest opening weekend.
True. Yes. Skyfall was 138, was it?
Oh, I thought it was a little longer than that.
It just felt longer. No, I like Skyfall. I don't like the third
act is quite long in Skyfall, and that's probably why it feels longer.
Yeah.
You know?
I like Skyfall a lot.
I really like Skyfall. I would argue it's one of the better films.
Oh, no.
It's my favourite Bond.
It's in my top five, but it's not.
I'm surprised at the level of backlash it generates, but again, every film these days generates backlash, particularly every successful film.
True. Yeah, and it had the easy to level at it, the
Home Alone thing that we just did.
The
running one, what is it?
Go on,
143 minutes.
So five's out by five. That's not so bad.
Wow.
But this is going to be. The problem is then, because it's longer, made film that's that bit longer means you
can't screen it as often.
As often. Yeah.
But I mean, on the other hand, again, this is where you're talking about. We're talking about the opening weekend that is stretched somewhat excessively.
It's 9-day opening weekend.
So I imagine that it will compete quite well against Skyfall, at least for that opening weekend. But I think
because in the UK, Odeon are charging a blockbuster premium, right? So if it's a film like Everest is this week, or it's a film like Spectre is going to be, they're charging an additional euro here, pound in the UK, but Spectre is going to be £1.50.
Wow. Well, they've already opened booking for it as well. The hype train is building.
Yeah. It'll be the same soon for Star Wars one will open soon as well.
Yeah.
So the thing I'm looking forward to seeing Spectre, because
I'm very fascinated.
I'm deliberately steering clear at the moment of any additional marketing material stuff, because
you've got to.
you do run a website. No, it's an Irish film website, but
I do. I will post links to trailers and all the rest, but I'm not watching.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Spectre was very much a victim of the email hack. Remember when the Sony email hack broke and it was everywhere? And you're like, this is great.
I managed to not read a lot of that.
Okay,
because I didn't believe that it was right.
So. No, I didn't believe that it was right either. But I tend to visit movie sites that put crap that makes you click in the headlines. So it's like, it's not like this information came from the Sony hack. It's like, oh wait, now it came from the Sony hack, and now I feel bad.
Fair.
Yeah, but I feel like Spectre was a victim in that, and that I think there's a lot of information out there, possibly.
True, yeah, and I already know too much about it. That's
I know very little about it. I did watch the trailer, but that's it.
Have you seen the Idris Elba cut of the trailer?
Yes.
It does look interesting.
That is brilliant. That came out, I saw it earlier.
Dodgy photoshopping of his head aside. Vulture, the website, you can probably find it on their website just by Googling it there, but they put together a trailer, basically mostly composited from Luther, of putting Idris Elba in the role of Bond in the trailer of Spectre. So you still have Christoph Waltz doing, you know, James, I've been waiting for you. But you also have Idris Elba, like, meditating on life and violence and anger.
I'll watch that later.
It's very worth watching. Now, there is a single dodgy Photoshop effect in there.
True.
But the rest, it's put together very well.
Okay.
I would like an Idris Elba Bond.
But I would too. I don't.
Absolutely.
But I think he's too popular for it. I think, like, the reality is he's too big a name.
So the news closer to home. There's two films actively filming at the moment. Cardboard Gangsters is filming at the moment.
Is it John Connerson?
John
Connerson.
Well, there's some of it's been shot in Darndale. So Yeah, there's a number of locations around the capital that where it's being shot. So it's filming at the moment, and there was a recent call out for extras, which is the information's up on the Facebook site. Also, there's on Saturday there is going to be a scene shot of Handsome Devil, the new John Butler film.
Okay.
And it's going to be shot in UCD, and they are also looking for extras as well for this scene, because they're going to replicate the Leinster Senior Cup rugby game. Brian O'Driscoll is actually going to be doing the choreography for it.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty nice.
So yeah, so that's pretty cool. We have news of the Melbourne Underground Film Festival, which has the
Muff.
Yeah, which is the Muff, yes. Which is it's going to show Patrick's
TIFF.
Yeah. Well, it's going to show Patrick's Day, and it's also going to show North Circular Road. So the two of them are going to screen there, and the two of them are also competing for a number of awards, Best International Feature. Both have the directors up for Best Directors, so Terry McMahon, Dolan Nugent are both up. Mo Dunford's up for Best Leads, and he's going to compete against Pat O'Donnell from North Circular Road. Likewise, Catherine Walker is up against Lauren Larkin. North Circular Road. So, and then cinematography is also for.
I've seen both. I really like Patrick's Day. I'm less inclined towards North Circular Road. It's okay.
Yeah, so
that one's good though.
It's your review that's on the website.
Oh, it is actually. Yeah.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's cruel. Sorry.
That's not.
I like Jonathan Rhys-Meyers actually.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers has been cast in a new film called. Shambhala, which is going to be a survivalist drama set in the Himalayas. So, basically what happens is he's the sole survivor of a plane crash, and he's hit with a sudden bout of amnesia, and he has to rely on the locals to survive. So.
Okay, I hope he doesn't get too mired in their affairs.
Ooh.
No?
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't fire the Reese's Pieces over this.
Liam Neeson in new action movie alert.
Jesus.
Really?
Yeah, the name.
How do they come up with that? I mean,
the name,
come on, he's an Oscar. Okay.
Liam Neeson is teaming up with Ruben Fleischer.
Okay.
To do a film called The Revenger.
Well, there's a simplicity there that I like.
They're played to a certain demographic here.
The Revenger.
Yep. So it's going to be written by the guys who wrote Night at the Museum, Thomas Lennon and Robert.
Yay! Finally, you've got another.
Is it going to be called Revenembles?
that would be quite cool.
So no.
No. So other news on the home front: Jared Barrett's Glassland has got North America distribution deal finally, because it showed at Sundance. So it's been a while. So Film Movement are going to release it over there early next year. So that's good. It's good.
Good
for getting further abroad. And then the big news of the week: Ireland has finally picked its nominee for Best Foreign Language.
Slightly surprising
film. Yes, and an excellent choice.
No, I've seen it, but I wasn't expecting it
because we thought Antoine's like would be the.
But we've done that before with as if I'm not there. The
yeah, to Yonita Wilson.
Yeah, for each film. Yonita Wilson.
But yes, so it is Paddy Bretnock's Viva, which is currently playing at TIFF, which last week we were talking about. Benicio del Toro is on as exec producer. It's a Spanish language drama set primarily in Cuba, some filming here, post production done here. It qualifies by dint of the fact that it has Irish money and is an Irish director. Irish director is the most, it seems to be the most important one, because that's how Haneke's war was Austrian rather than French.
This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
Very similar countries. We're not the only ones. It's essentially the film equivalent to the grandparent rule for football.
Well, that's it. Yes, only since that's exactly how my wife describes it. Since 2006 has it been allowed. That's not a native language. One of the ones that was most interesting, in the ones where you had to submit in one of your native languages, was Canada did one that was in Inuit.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's one of the native languages in Northern Territory. So,
yeah.
Since 2006 you've been able to do this. What will be interesting is to see, it's going to be up against some of Saul and Rams and Teeb and some like ones
this means we're going to get like the Celine Dion of foreign Oscars soon, right?
Hey, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Well, we have so many co-productions now, but the only problem is that most of them are in English, so we can't.
We do some European ones. What's the, is that 11 minutes one? Is that in English as well?
It's in English, yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, so.
No worry, they'll put like a time limit on it, and we'll hit it by default. It'd be great.
But one of these things is the films, I'm saying, it's going to be up against Sunasal and Teeb and Rams and Pigeon Sat in the Branch Reflecting on Existence. And if Denmark picks it, The Look of Silence. Now, what I would be very interested in seeing is...
That's Best Foreign Film.
Yeah. If a documentary got in as Best Foreign Film. Because I haven't seen that happen before. So.
I mean, there's nothing precluded, I presume.
No, it has to be feature-length... Yeah. Film
in the same way that there was nothing to preclude an animated film from getting the Best Picture nomination until it
just
happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's nothing precluding an animated film being up for Best Foreign Language Film.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course.
If we get one of our really, really good animation studios to make a film that's in Irish first.
Yeah.
That wasn't Secret Kells.
Yeah, but. Song of the Sea has an Irish language version, but it's
so
in,
we,
it's in
we just need to.
Oh, I get you.
Yeah. So we just released the Irish language version. Not that we would condone anything like this, but just release the Irish language version first. Wait until Oscar season passes, and then package it on DVD with the English language version. I am so cynical.
But there's no. I don't see anything wrong with that in the context of raising the international profile.
Yeah.
If
we call the English language version a dubbed version.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, and if it's set in Dublin.
a dubbed
version. Yeah. Call me, people. Yeah. Call me. I've got good ideas.
Well, there is parts of the Song of the Sea in Dublin, actually, really. So there you go. Yeah. Could have done it.
Yeah.
Sorry, chance.
So one of the great things that, or one of the, yeah, so this is great. This is going to be in Irish. Yet again, last year we had On Brutness, so we've had few. And so it's great to see that
finally.
We can start churning them out, you know, and this one could. Could make the final.
It's that much of a.
Having Benicio del Toro there, it being in Spanish as well, rather than Irish, it's not as niche a language. So,
true. Be good. It'd be really good if it happened.
It would be fantastic. So we move on to the top 10.
Okay.
Ooh, yes. The top 10 is always our most favourite of all of these. It's when we get into the sort of really interesting conversations as to what is a good or bad film.
What is the relative worth of X?
Exactly. So at 9, at 10, sorry,
speaking of
it, is Trainwreck. 5 weeks in
Trainwreck. Hanging it in there.
And this will be its last week.
Yeah.
It dropped 43% down to 22,000. So
I still haven't seen it actually.
It's grand. It's a very
it's okay. I have no kind of issue with nothing. I just
yeah. It's not yeah.
It's going to fall short of the million. It won't make it. It'll barely make eight. It'll make eight something.
But I mean, it's a romantic comedy with a bunch of performers who are not necessarily very expensive.
True, but it's also one of the hyped comedies of the summer. So.
Yeah, but it's hyped in certain circles. Like
well,
I think
it's hyped here. I mean,
But I think that it's hyped in certain circles. And again, I don't think that Universal are going to be crying at the end of this year.
And I'm not too sorry for them either.
Yeah. Now, to be honest, I would rather Trainwreck did better than some of the films that did particularly well for them. But
Universal have 4 in the top 10 at the moment.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It just never ends in them, does it?
Nope.
Yeah, they've got Universal appeal.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
What? Pun's going to turn into a train wreck.
No. At 9...
Because we loved it so much.
Dropping 48% is me.
Still not enough.
And Earl and the Dying Girl.
You know, I only just got that was meant to be a rhyme. A really, really terrible rhyme.
This is your warning, people. Stop believing everything that comes out of Sundance.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible. But has anybody else here seen it?
No.
I'm not in. I don't like it.
But really, my smile doesn't convince you that it's worth your time.
That's a grimace there.
I suffered through it. Somebody else.
You are a trooper. You're
Well, it's falling like a stone.
I watched that. Princess Grace and Monaco. So
that was your idea.
I might get there at some point.
Its per screen average means that it is not sticking around much longer,
and that's good because it shows that audiences have taste.
Sometimes.
No, we'll get on to why audiences don't have taste now in a minute. At 8, it's No Escape, also dropping like a stone.
Child Bunting. That's all that I know about this film because I've been unable to catch the preview and haven't had a chance to watch it since. I know that its defining scene is a scene where two parents try and figure out how to best get children across a big gap between buildings. And carefully rationing out the situation, they decide the best approach is to jump across themselves, jump one across and bunt the children across. Owen Wilson and Lake Bell saying
I wouldn't trust Owen Wilson with a child that
is he throwing
he's just too stoner.
Don't worry.
Put the kid down, Owen.
Yeah. Don't worry, we've got a second one in case this doesn't work out.
We tried Hansel, here's Gretel.
Yeah. But yeah, I know very little about the film beyond the fact that it features a child bunting scene.
And Pierce Brosnan.
Yes.
And that it's one of his posters is a blatant ripoff of another poster. One of the posters features a sort of helicopter view of cities that make up the shape of a gun, and it is an exact copy of an already existing poster.
Yes.
And those guys really need to be sued.
There's no escaping justice.
Yeah. At seven, and there's no escaping banality.
Pixels. Banality. Really? That's what we're going for here. Okay.
Just sheer god awfulness.
Yes, sheer terribleness.
Yeah.
It really is. It's
up 14%.
Yes. Somehow against all natural laws, much like the film itself. It's managed.
I said this last week that it could keep going.
And it is.
But a week more. Are weird.
Yeah. Do people like Adam Sandler? Like, I mean, even like.
People do, don't they?
How are people still going to this 5 weeks out? How is
you imagine that if you're going to see Pixels, you would have seen it already, surely.
What do you get to the cinema a few weeks later? It's like, what are we going to see? Oh, that Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, we only go to the cinema once every month. I mean, come on, we don't waste it. Let's go, Pixels.
Yeah.
It's just a terrible, terrible, terrible film. Sexist, it's homophobic,
it has Kevin James. I mean,
reason than not to be anything.
Yeah, it's terribly direct. There's no inspiration.
Just the worst.
It butchers a concept that could be interesting. That was great when it was a Futurama episode.
Yes, I did love the Futurama.
It was tales of interest. Actually, do yourself a favor, instead of going to
it's
see
too
Pixels,
late, you've all seen
no, don't see Pixels again.
Yeah, that's where you were at the time.
But yes.
Moving on. At six, in a preview weekend, so really shouldn't
and
be
and another Universal entry.
Is Everett. 9,000. And not only that.
Anticipation is met.
Yeah. Oh. Has it reached its summit?
I hope it hasn't peaked.
Yeah. It's per screen location, or per location average, it's close on $5,000. That is phenomenal.
It is, because it only screened at Omniplex.
It's preview week is it's preview week is IMAX, isn't it? Or is it
I don't think it's officially IMAX. I think it's the Omniplex equivalent of IMAX.
Oh, okay, it's Omniplex Max.
Omniplex Max.
Yeah.
Except no substitutes. Except this one.
The thing about the Omniplex Max is I have an article up on the website about it, and it's got incredible sound system in
No, I actually quite like it, and I think that the Imitation Max, what do you call it?
Linux
is what they call it. But in terms of like actual screen measurement and function, it's just a brand.
True.
Yeah. So you can get an equivalent effect.
Really big screen, really good sound system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Without it being literally IMAX.
Yeah. IMAX is proprietary.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So that you have it's franchising basically.
Yes.
Not that we don't like IMAX. I like IMAX.
Plus, you can film on IMAX cameras, which is a different format of film as well.
Yeah.
But you can't record dialogue because they're so loud. And there are only how many of them in the world?
Very few. There's new ones that are now record IMAX 3D digitally and stuff as well.
That seems like a very niche interest. And Christopher Nolan's destroyed, two of them?
Christopher Nolan is the god of IMAX.
I'm sure you can afford it.
At five... Because Everest is a this week's release, so we'll come to new releases. At five is The Visit.
Oh.
So The Visit is, came in at five.
Yeah, comeback. People talking about comeback. Apparently Wayward Pines is also good, so we're in M. Night Shyamalan.
Watched the first two episodes of Wayward Pines and I'm not sold on it.
I saw a trailer and I'm not sold on it, but, I generally avoid that. But I don't know for it to come back, we'll see.
All right, I think a lot of trust has been lost over the years. Because I remember when he first arrived, and he was the next big thing. He was going to be the next big Hitchcock.
What folly.
Yeah. Generally, people who comment on films are idiots.
Calling anyone the next Hitchcock before they have a good 20 films under their belt is a bit wrong, is it not?
It is.
But hey, it's not as if we live in an age of hype.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Anyway, F4, Inside Out.
It's great that that's still there.
Up 24%.
See, that's like the counter pixels.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, that makes me feel good.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. It's great. And it'll be interesting. I suspect that will also be on a couple of top 10 lists.
Yeah, and breaking the universal homogeny on the box office for the year as well. So.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's not one or two because Universal ones down.
No.
Yeah.
That's good.
A two or a three is Straight Outta Compton. 3 weeks in.
Yeah, I like it. Doing okay.
Three weeks in. It's more than okay. It's past Trainwreck in terms of its box office.
Which I commented on last week also. Not that anybody listens to me.
Sorry, what are you saying?
Yeah, exactly.
No,
I liked it as a film. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it's going to cost you $1 million, $30 handily.
Yeah, great.
It's a great example of sort of kind of programming in terms of releasing in late summer and on a budget that was not excessive on a sort of material that you would consider to be niche. I think the studio would have considered to be niche.
It's a breakout. It's good. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they're kind of forensic clean enough aside, it's good.
Yeah, no, and I like whatever about Universal like owning the box office this year. I think the slate is broadly speaking interesting.
Yeah, like, I mean, it they were looking at a couple of things that they made as much as they did, but in general,
I think that any slate that gives you Trainwreck and Straight Outta Compton, you can forgive any problems with Jurassic World. Completely. And there are a couple of problems with Jurassic World.
At two, Maze Runner: The Scorched Trial, straight in at number two.
Was this popular? This
I didn't think that Maze Runner made that much money. I can't remember.
It wasn't amazing.
Well, it made enough. It's the third highest of those
young adult adaptations.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw it and it was grand. It was not an objectionable young adult adaptation. It was better than the Twilight films, which is not a high bar to pass. I just remember watching it and thinking, this is not particularly inspired. It's better than Divergent.
It's competing with Divergent in terms of that sort of level. Yeah. Yeah. It's not going to be Twilight. It's not going to be Dunker Games. It's or Divergent for, you know.
Yeah, well, I think we're sort of past the, I don't know. Do you think that there's going to be another young adult breakout in the style of Twilight or Hunger Games or stuff? Like, do you think there's anything coming
may be, but I don't know if there will be yet.
Okay.
You know, there may need to be a break for it to come back. It made $340 million worldwide, the first one.
And I suppose that's nothing to scoff at, particularly when you're working in a film like that, so you can cast young actors who are not necessarily expensive.
No, very, very, very true.
I'm surprised at how well it did, because I wouldn't have considered it I wouldn't consider the original to be one of the better.
It was fine.
It was perfectly serviceable.
Yeah.
But then again, I quite enjoyed the trashiness of Immortal Instruments, if you're going for like young adult.
Mortal Instruments.
Is it Mortal Instruments?
Mortal Instruments.
See, I've already forgotten. But I just remember it looking...
I know, because I've read the book and it's dreadful.
Yeah. But it is terrible, but it commits to its terribleness, which I kind of liked, as opposed to just being milquetoast.
The one that I liked was Beautiful Creatures I liked, and it didn't go anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is a shame, but anyway.
Sorry.
This is all past me by. I haven't seen it.
You're too old, man. You don't get it.
I don't get it. I'm not down with the kids.
Yeah, hit them with it.
At one, Legend.
Or the Hardy Books movie. I quite enjoyed it. Not brilliant, not transcendental, not mind-blowing, but I thought it was good. Well put together. Competently made. Great, two great central performances. Great ensemble cast. You know, if you're looking for like a Scorsese-type film without... being particularly without wanting Scorsese level quality, it's not a bad choice. Yeah, there's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, and you've lost your copy of American Hustle.
It's better than American Hustle.
That is again not a
ringing endorsement.
No,
it's a better top 10 than last week.
I don't think this is an all time classic top 10. In fairness, that sort of dropped when we hit Mural and Iron Girl, continued through No Escape, and landed on Pixels.
Yeah.
It was all up from there, baby.
That's true.
Yeah.
Still, it's hard to hate any top 10 that has Inside Out in it. So.
Yes. Well, the last couple of weeks made it very easy to try.
Yes, very, very, very true. So, this week's new releases.
Okay, hit me with it.
We have a Syrian love story, which is playing at the Fingal Film Festival, and it's also going to play as part of the IFI documentary film festival. It's opening in the UK this weekend.
Peter Bradshaw, 5-star review from what I gather from today.
Yeah, so it's an interesting looking film. I sadly will be away during the Fingal Festival and also during the documentary film festival, so I will miss it, but I'm going to try catch it on VOD because it's a fascinating story.
Yeah,
It's filmed over 5 years, and it's about it's looking for it. It's very pertinent to what's happening right now because it being based on events in Syria. But then it charts people looking for freedom and following the Arab Spring and all that sort of stuff in Syria, and it won the Grand Jury Prize at Sheffield. But the Sheffield Documentary Film Festival is one of the
top
best
ones. Yeah.
So. So, it is going to be something that I would want to see.
Okay.
Then we have, in terms of the big releases, Everest is the big release. That's Balthazar Kormákur's film with absolutely
everybody.
Set on top of Mount Everest. It
looks like he held a summit of great actors.
Whoa!
It's an avalanche of talent.
The sheer scale of it. God.
Yeah? I wouldn't bet against it.
God,
that's actually pretty good. I like that.
Thank you.
You just have to get a couple in the palace together and then off you go. So it's based.
I haven't seen it yet either.
No, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. It's based on the real events of 1996 Mount Everest disaster, and basically it's about the survival attempts of two exposition groups who were trapped at the summit following.
Did you say exposition?
Expedition.
One of them is an exposition. Then you sit around and tell the audience what's happening.
Basil Exposition from Austin Powers is in there. So one is led by Jake Gyllenhaal, the other is led by Jason Clarke. Yeah, so the cast includes Jason Clarke, Josh Brolin, Michael Kelly, John Hawkes, Robin Wright, Emily Watson, Keira Knightley, Sam Worthington, and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Everybody.
It's
an amazing cast. I remember was it in the noughties, or was it maybe the late 90s, where you had a phase of like mountaineering movies like Vertical Limit, and then there was
Alive.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So I feel maybe this is like a 20-year nostalgia thing for that.
Maybe. Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls as well.
Yeah, great opening scene.
I
feel like When Nature Calls is due a critical reevaluation.
I always loved it.
I rewatched it recently. It is so much fun.
I love Ace Ventura.
Everest is it's being set up as a proper full-on experience film, and it looks like it'll be something worth seeing.
It'll leave the Everest behind, will it?
Hey.
It's generally been met with an avalanche of positive reviews. No, I.
Please, for the love of God, no
There's
more.
There's no escaping the buns here.
No, it's been met with generally quite good reviews. It's so it is something that I will. I'll probably
won't bother.
I might get a chance to see it in America, but I don't know if I will. Then we have Horse Money, Pedro Costa's one, which played at the Dublin Film Festival.
I didn't catch it at Dublin Film Festival, alas. But I've heard good things.
Yeah, Matt Sauer's Iced gave a 3.5 out of 4 on Roger Ebert's site. So it's Pedro Costa films, generally speaking, are worth watching. The man knows what he's doing. It's kind of hard to describe exactly what the name of God is going on in this film, but it's I'm just
going to be experienced.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. I'm just going
much like Everest.
Yes, much like Everest. I'm just going to move on because this week is a bit odd, you know. In terms of the new releases, there isn't a lot. Which is why it's probably a good week that Pursuit, the new Irish crime thriller, is out, because there's few other
contenders.
Contenders in the chart. So the Pursuit is based on it's filmed by Paul Mercier, produced by Anne Gately, and it's the story of it's a modern retelling of Dermot and Grania, the old Irish tale of Dermot and Grania, which is in with Nafina and all that sort of those stories of Bramble and Cooley and the stories of Satanta and Cú Chulainn and all those classic Irish stories. So Paul Mercier, who directs, is he had to study when he was in the Leaving Cert, doing the Leaving Cert years ago, and so it stuck with him, and he had this idea of reimagining it in modern contemporary, so with the crime gangs taking the place of Nafina and the Fionn McCool being now a sort of enforcer for the drug cartel, who are the guys who are looking after this disadvantaged neighbourhood. So the character of Fionn is a bit sort of put out by the fact that his the other guys that he grew up with that were in the same sort of criminal gangs that he was in are gone off now and they're living life in south of Spain or in big mansions or whatever, but he stayed in the community to help the community in some ways, and then and that he's kind of resentful of that. He's lost his wife as the kind of guy who's he would have been the right hand man for no longer kind of wants him, and so some other members of his clan try to arrange a marriage between him and the daughter of this guy who's Grania, who, but there's a big age gap and it's very much a political marriage of convenience. She doesn't want any part of it. She kidnaps his lieutenant who she has a past relationship with, and they go off on, so she holds him at gunpoint and forces him to drive away with her, and then it becomes a very much a road movie, and pursuit, as the name suggests, really comes into play, and it's quite fast paced. It moves like the clappers once you get into that sort of that part of the film, and it goes off, and a lot of it is filmed in Spain, and then it comes back, and the frantic pace means that you can overlook some of the plot holes. There's definitely more of the film there than you're seeing. There's lines that are dropped in that obviously allude to an earlier version where something was shown. It hasn't been shown now, and it feels a little clunky that's still in there. But it's overall a very enjoyable experience to watch it because it goes so quickly, and it's at 96 minutes. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's got a great sort of energetic soundtrack to it, and it's got fantastic performances because you have Liam Cunningham as Fionn, you have Rook Bradley in the lead, you have Barry Ward then as Dermot, so Dermot and Ronnie, and then you have Owen Rowe, and Brendan Gleeson has a small role in it as well, who's the Charvon, and so it's just it's a very interesting idea to reimagine an old Irish tale in this way, and because it's an independent release, it has Irish Film Board financing, it has Telegale money in there as well, and there's money from the BAI and other sources, and also got commercial sponsorship, but it's been independently distributed. IMC, they did a deal with IMC, so it's in the IMC, all the IMC cinemas nationwide, and that's brave.
Yeah.
And I would like to see it rewarded for its bravery in that respect. And it happens to be good. It's not going to be a great Irish film. It's not going to be one that you're
but an enjoyable experience while you're there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's,
and at 96 minutes, you'll think of it as time waste.
Exactly. Yeah. So
McCool running, if you will.
Oh, good God.
Right.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know if we really should apply for that.
Listen, the man's a master.
Fionn for the road. I should work in taglines, or I should write Daily Mail headlines. Either alternative.
Either
alternative.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other interesting films that's out this week is, and I don't know how it happened, is Robert Redford is playing Bill Grayson in A Walk in the Woods.
All I could say of this is
Robert Redford's 20 years older than Bill Grayson.
I've read the book a long time ago. And I saw the trailer 3 times yesterday.
Just to be sure.
And honestly, I do not want to see this. That looks awful.
But Robert Redford, Nick Nolte, Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson's, 20 years younger than... So even that rule with casting applies
Robert
to Robert
Redford.
Redford
looks like he should be called Robert Redwood, because he looks as old as some of those trees. That's not bad, actually.
I like that.
But he looks around 100. But the trailer looks generic as hell. You'd hope the film was better than that. I suspect it's not.
It's like Wild, but with Nick Nolte instead of... not Nick Nolte, Robert Redford instead of Reese Witherspoon. That's what I'm getting from this.
Yeah, but it's based on a Bill Bryson book, so you know you have a good source material there.
Yeah, but he's not really a...
he's
fiction
not,
writer. it's travelogue, you know, with kind of asides.
Yeah, true.
And they're good asides. He's a funny writer, but... I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe it's... I think it's aimed at a certain demographic, put it that way. The proverbial Blue Rinse Brigade may well enjoy this.
The Silver Dollar.
Yeah, the Silver Dollar will...
We'll come on to one that's
more...
I
was part of a gang called the Silver Dollar.
The one that's more of your speed then, Jason, is Estonian drama Tangerines.
Okay, I don't know anything about this.
It was the first Estonian film to be put forward for Best Foreign Language.
It sounds like a Tangerine Dream.
I don't know. Yeah, okay. I think I've seen the poster for the Hi-Fi.
It's set during the war in...
Abkhazia,
that happened in 1992, okay. So between Georgia and Estonia over like that territory. And it follows these guys who stayed there despite the fact that there's unrest because they wanted to harvest their crop of tangerines and so on.
Okay, hence the name.
And then they end up taking in a wounded soldier and things get a little bit more complicated.
As you always do.
As a result. Yes, so.
Okay.
But it'd probably be worth checking that one out. It's on the IFI. I mean, how often do you get to see Estonian war dramas? You know,
might be a fruitful exercise.
Ooh. Then, there's a new film, and this is the last one that we're going to talk about this week. There's a new film out this week that has Jack Black in it.
Let's not talk
has
about it.
Oh, the D-Train!
It has James Marsden in it, and yes, called the D-Train.
It has a twist, I believe.
Yeah.
That nobody's heard of it? Is that a twist?
Okay. No, I've heard of it. I've heard that it has some very deep structural problems to do with the fact that it's got a twist, but it won't tell you what the twist is, and therefore, the entire point of the film.
Nobody's going to see it.
Yeah, everybody loves James Marsden, right?
Yeah, and Jeffrey Tambor.
But he'll work for food, I think. I love Jeffrey Tambor, but he's one of those actors who doesn't have a quality control sort of on his output, I think.
Yeah.
But
Jack Black plays the self-proclaimed chairman of a high school alumni committee and is planning 20th reunion, but he's trying to get the
coolest
most popular
kid
from the school.
Who is James Marsden. Imagine going to a school where James Marsden is your coolest kid.
No, I can't imagine.
I wasn't cool and I can't imagine that.
The Xavier School of
Don't Touch the Bike. Cyclops was the real hero in those days.
Cyclops was definitely the coolest X-Men.
Yes, definitely. He had a motorbike.
And a hot girlfriend.
And a hot girlfriend who killed him and then hooked up with Wolverine. They do that. As
hot girlfriends.
Yeah.
This sounds dreadful, the Jack Black film. Well, I will not be seeing it.
I would argue Black has the capacity to surprise and do good things on occasion. Like, I think
two words to you. Year one.
Okay, but also in response to that,
Bernie.
Bernie.
We deep down, all of us sitting here know this ain't Bernie. No. We're at the other end of the spectrum.
When good Jack Black requires Richard Linklater at the other side of the camera.
Good
then,
point. Also, spilled rough. Okay,
we'll go see and report back, Darren, next week.
Call me.
Opened in the US to less than $500,000. For the 15th worst opening for a wide release film.
But it's okay, because it still opened better than We Are Your Friends, right?
Yes, it did. Yes.
You go see everything. I want you to see it and report back next week.
How come you always get to set the terrible film challenges?
Because you were talking up to Mr. Defender over there, so speak with your dollars, my friend.
All right, or euros.
Just to put it into context, 5.2 on IMDb.
Okay, maybe not going to say maybe backing off. I mean, come on, like, it's IMDb. Like 5.2 on IMDb is pretty much like 0.2. There's a polite 5.
Yeah.
It's the gentleman's
it's the,
5.
It's the
yeah.
false bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done.
Right, and on that note, we shall leave it for the week.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.